Greetings and salutations, my friend. Welcome in to this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. Hoping you're having a decent day and that all is well with you and yours. And I didn't think I'd ever have to say this, but and I hope you're safe. Welcome into the podcast. Good to have you here. Thank you so much for listening. The destruction, the rioting, the lawlessness continues in America. And I don't know why we should be surprised at all that it is, because we have been watching preparations for this for quite some time. We've been watching people being programmed. We've been watching people lied to, believing the lies, because they want to believe those lies. And we'll talk about one of those big lies coming up here in just a couple of minutes, because it really is the big absurd item of the day. Yeah, we'll talk about that coming up here in just a few minutes. But first off, hopefully you had a good day yesterday. Hopefully all is going well for you today. I hope that you, as I said, are safe and your family is safe. And I hope that you are being wise and taking care of yourself and your family. Today, I am in need of venturing out because things are happening in life. Real life still goes on. And today, I'll be venturing out to handle a handful of things. And I have been plotting my routes to avoid the metro area of downtown Birmingham, Alabama. I live just outside, not just outside. I live outside of Birmingham, Alabama, and I don't live in the metro area. I rarely go there because I have no need to, not because it's a preference, but I just don't need to. And now I would prefer not to go there because it's dangerous, because we have had rioting. We have had the property destruction. And the mayor of the city has decided to pacify the angry people, as progressive mayors have been doing across the country. We have a long history of pacifying people. It never works, because when you pacify people, they always want more. Yeah, well, since you're going to give us that, how about this? It's the way it always works. And they change structures, they change everything to pacify people. And those people are the kind of people who, if you give them an inch, they will scrape and clamor and scream for a mile. You can't pacify terrorists. You just can't. You can't pacify criminals. You just can't. But in the progressive mind, that pacification is an act of heroism. That pacification is help. In the conservative mind, the way to deal with the situation is the way our president did yesterday, by telling governors, you need to get tough on these people. You need to dominate the situation. You need to show them where the power really is. You need to put this down, and put it down now, or I will. And, of course, the leftists in the media and the progressives in government all gasped and clutched their pearls and could not believe that a president would say such words. But he did, and he was right. A couple of items of absurdity today before we get rolling. First up, do you remember Keith Ellison? He's the former congressman who left office amidst accusations of violence against his ex. He ran to be the chair of the Democrat National Committee, and he lost to Tom Perez, and he eventually wound up as the Attorney General of Minnesota. He was the first African-American selected to statewide office in the North Star State, as well as the first Muslim. Remember, he's the guy who was sworn into office on the Koran. He also seems awfully cozy with Antifa. His son, who is also in politics, has endorsed Antifa and stands behind them. In a now-deleted tweet, Ellison actually posed with a copy of the Antifa handbook. He tweeted, at Moon Palace Books, and I just found the book that strikes fear in the heart of Donald Trump. And he's kind of grinning and holding up the Antifa Anti-Fascist Handbook. Oh, he's chummy with Antifa. Later, he was photographed with Luis Enrique Marquez, the head of Portland's Antifa Coalition. Now, he has some new responsibilities. This totally impartial paragon of virtue will be taking the lead in the prosecution of the police officer who killed George Floyd. If other officers are charged, he will be handling their prosecutions as well. NBC tells us that Minnesota's governor appointed State Attorney General Keith Ellison on Sunday to lead the prosecution of any cases arising from the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin is charged with third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter in Floyd's death on May 25th as Chauvin pinned his neck to the ground with his knee. Governor Tim Walz announced Ellison's appointment as lead prosecutor shortly after the Hennepin County prosecutor said he had asked Ellison to assist in the investigation 2 days after 10 members representing Minneapolis in the state house asked Walz in a letter to transfer the case to Ellison. Now, I think most of us would agree that the cop who killed Floyd is trouble. Some say he's a murderer. Full stop. Others, who stood by doing nothing, should be charged as accessories. In just a word, they should all be convicted for something. However, Ellison is not the guy who should be handling this. His activist history, including his obvious bias, makes him utterly unsuited to the position he holds. If people really want justice for George Floyd, they will not get it from Ellison. They'll get shameless grandstanding from a guy who will use the process to further his career, his position within his party, and his agenda. Even if he gets a conviction, his involvement will taint that conviction. If he had any decency, he'd remove himself from the process and allow it to pass on to someone in whom everyone can have faith in. Unfortunately, he's Keith Ellison. He has no decency. So that's not going to happen. And that, as I described yesterday, is horribly absurd. This man, whose track record we are familiar with, has been politically appointed to oversee the prosecution of the police officer who killed George Floyd. And much as the riots are a complete and total misrepresentation of what's actually going on, this politicization at the state level is also misrepresenting what's really going on. Keith Ellison is not the right person for this job. He'll never be the right person for this job. It's going to be interesting to watch that play out. Shifting things a little bit, another absurd item of the day. The founder of BET, Black Entertainment Television, Robert Johnson, has called for $14 trillion in reparation payments to African Americans. He said so yesterday. He told Brett Baer over at Fox News that Americans must look at the passing of time in total context. Might I add that most of us right-thinking people actually are looking at the total context and not the interpretation of it? Quote, part of that context is people have a right to protest when they see injustice. That goes all the way back to Dr. Martin Luther King. But on the other hand, we have to go to the root cause of people's protesting that leads to violence, whether it's agitated violence or just violence because people feel frustrated and bitter. Got to be honest with you, can't say that I disagree with that at all. But I see it differently. Johnson cited the Kerner Commission report on the 1967 race riots, which famously stated, quote, "Our nation is moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and equal." Johnson said, "To me, the fundamental cause is the economic inequality that African Americans as a whole face in this nation. And unless we move aggressively to solve that problem, this riot will be the foundation of future riots unless we solve that problem." Now, Brett Baer asked Johnson who would be responsible for providing the $14 trillion in reparations and how the U.S. can afford it at a time of economic turmoil. Johnson responds, "The taxpayers will pay for this because, for two reasons, particularly. One, it's an atonement for 200-plus years of slavery, segregation, Jim Crowism, and the denial of people opportunity rights. But the result of that payment would be to bring African Americans equal to white Americans in terms of opportunity, wealth, and income." Oh, God. Actually, no, neither one of those things is true. "Instead of looking at it as a payment," he says, "look at it as an investment in 40 million African Americans who deserve equal treatment and equal opportunity." He adds that the return on that investment would include more African Americans taking responsibility to build their communities and families and to become successful business people and entrepreneurs who pay taxes and contribute to society. "But unless white Americans recognize the need for reparations to atone for this, this country will always be separate and unequal." Now, Mr. Johnson did really well for himself under exactly the same circumstances as everyone he wants the reparations for. In case you didn't know it, Mr. Johnson is a billionaire. That's with a B. And that phrase, separate and unequal. Mr. Johnson, can I ask you some questions? Why did this actually happen? Who pulled away from who? Who decided to embrace a separate identity and isolate themselves from everyone else and point fingers of blame at everyone else? Who, but those who actually led them into this isolation? $14.7 trillion. Oh, yeah, we've got that in our pants pocket. Sure, we can do that. You want reparations? Okay. Your reparations checks will be taxed at the same rate as bonuses, 40 to 50%. We'll be deducting the cost of all the property damages and the medical bills incurred by those for whom you are seeking reparations since the beginning of riots in American history. If you want reparations, try getting them from the politicians who lied to you, sir, promising that they would change the world for you if you elected them, and then did nothing they promised to do, and knew they couldn't deliver on those promises because most of them were unconstitutional. Unconstitutional. And they knew it. And those who didn't should never have been elected to office in the first place, because ignorance of our Constitution and what it really stands for is the root of everything we're watching right now. And keeping people ignorant of our Constitution and what it stands for is why those people are in the street, because they don't understand what this country was founded to be. Those demanding reparations deny the root of all of the problems. He talks about, I'm scanning back up the article here to find his exact words. Oh, here we go. 200 plus years of slavery. There has not been 200 years of slavery. We have not had slavery in this country for the past 200 years. We haven't. In fact, there are nations where slavery still exists, sir. It's an ongoing thing. Arab nations. But not here. In fact, we were one of those nations who led the fight against it. And it was Republicans who did that. The party was founded to eliminate slavery. Jim Crowism, that was all the Democrats, sir. And no, those people at those times, they didn't become Republicans. One of them, only one of them did. The rest of them all died Democrats. All but one of them. The denial of people opportunity rights? Democrats. Every time. The money would not bring African Americans equal to white Americans in terms of opportunity, wealth, and income. It would not. I hate to say this, but when people who desperately want money get money, they tend to not have money very soon after that. We've seen it time and time and time again. As people with nothing win lotteries, as people win huge lawsuits, as people who don't understand what money is and what it does get it, it's not long before it's gone. And so, when that's gone, they'll be back standing with their hands out, screaming, yelling, destroying personal and private property, and demanding equality. And more cash. So, no, Mr. Johnson. Just no. Happy tunes. Come on. Yeah. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast for Tuesday, the second day of June, 2020. Glad to have you along. Thank you so much for being there. I appreciate the fact that you're there. And no, I'm not angry. I'm going back to the previous segment. I'm not angry. I'm just being real. Look, I've been around for over 60 years. Let's just put it that way. There are my days when I really do feel like an old fart. Yesterday was one of those days. Most days, not so much. But I'm not going to let the idiocy of a certain group of people determine my outcome, determine my attitude about life. I'm just not going to. I'm going to be real about it, and I'm going to point a finger at it and say, well, that's stupid, and here's why. And one of the reasons I do that is because I'm at pawpaw level now. You know what I mean? I'm old enough. I honestly don't care what anybody thinks about what I say. I mean, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings intentionally, but if you get your feelings hurt coming away from something I've said, you better sit down with me and talk with me about it so I understand why and you understand why. It's the only way things work out. But honestly, if you're offended by what I just said about reparations, I suggest you actually do a little digging and find out the truth. Because what Mr. Johnson, Mr. BET billionaire, is saying has no foundation in truth. It has foundation in propaganda put forth by those who seek to control. That's where its foundation is. Well, President Trump got tough yesterday. He got tough with governors across America in a call. He had Attorney General Bill Barr beside him. Tough words for governors in a call addressing the nationwide riots. According to ABC News, in a call with the nation's governors on Monday, yesterday, an angry President Donald Trump told state leaders, angry. Now, that's ABC's words, angry. I'm not saying he was angry. I seriously doubt he was angry. I think he was probably firm, and he was probably very straightforward, but I doubt he was angry. Because, can I sidebar this? Pardon me, Your Honor, sidebar. The situation here with Donald Trump is this is a businessman, a very successful businessman. He's a billionaire for a reason, and that reason is that he is not an idiot. That reason is that he knows what he's doing when he's dealing with people, and he understands how to motivate people and understands what demotivates people. He wants someone to work for him and be successful for him because it makes him successful. He doesn't do things in anger unless those people have screwed him somehow, and there he's about to utter those two words. You fired. That's when he gets angry. These are not people he can fire. These are not people he can do anything about. These are people who have convinced their citizens to put them in office. He's trying to motivate these people to work. So for ABC News to say he's angry in this call, it's deceptive, it's dishonest, and it's typical. President Donald Trump told state leaders they must dominate out-of-control protests, calling on law enforcement to get much tougher and blaming unrest erupting across many communities squarely on the radical left. Now, ABC uses quotes, the radical left, as though that is something Oh, yeah. Well, he says it's the radical left, and I'm air quoting, right? The president and attorney general, William Barr, used the word dominate nearly a dozen times in describing how law enforcement should posture themselves. Quote, you have to dominate. If you don't dominate, you're wasting your time. That's according to a recording of the call obtained by ABC News. Now, I think it's interesting that they got a recording of the call because there are people leaking. Of course, there are leftists in all these Democrat governor's offices. And of course, they're going to be happy to provide a recording of the call. Quote, they're going to run over you. You're going to look like a bunch of jerks. You have to dominate. You have to know what you're dealing with. That's what the president told the governors. And it's happened before, he says. This happened numerous times, and the only time it's successful is when you're weak, and most of you are weak. Trump said they were making a mistake by letting looters destroy property and called for arresting and prosecuting those captured on camera, saying they should be put in jail for 10 years. The president also said governors were slow to call on the National Guard. Quote, why you're not calling them up, I don't know. But you making a mistake and making yourselves... You're making a mistake and making yourselves look like fools. These are terrorists, Antifa, and the radical left. Now, in the last paragraph of this ABC News article, ABC writes, quote, in his opening remarks, he made no mention of George Floyd, end quote. Why should he mention George Floyd? None of this is about George Floyd. Oh, their signs may say, the people who are sincerely, actually peacefully protesting may say it's about George Floyd, but the damage, the rioting, the robbing, the theft, that's not about George Floyd. It's not. They say this as if to paint Trump in an uncaring way over the death of Floyd. That's ridiculous. The president has made it clear just how horrible he feels the death of Floyd was last week. Robert Costa from over at the Washington Post tweeted about the call. Said, I'm in touch with someone who's on the governor's call with President Trump now. They and others listening are alarmed. The president is urging governors to take back the streets, not to be weak, to use force. As the nation faces growing racial unrest... They're alarmed. Oh, they're alarmed. Bless their poor little hearts. They're alarmed.
If I could have gotten 51.
Yeah, they're alarmed. They're alarmed, all right. Bless their poor little hearts. God love them. He goes on to say, more, President Trump just berated governors and mayors for how they are handling the protests, calling them fools, per the person on the call. Now, he said they look like fools. He didn't call them fools. Aides to governors say the president continues to talk. One describes it as a rant. Says he keeps talking about the need to dominate the protests. President Trump just compared this current national crisis to a war on the call with governors, per the person on it. And he urged the governors to fight back. President Trump may be using harsher language than these governors are used to hearing, but look what's happening to the cities. People are being attacked mercilessly by mobs. Last night we had cops shot. Shot! Police officers shot. In Las Vegas, one shot in the back of the head. Fires raging. Businesses being looted. Massive scale. Huge scale. Our president is right to hammer these governors for allowing this to continue to happen. They're allowing it to happen. This has been going on with liberal governors for quite a while. They allow these people to act out. They allow these people to do all of this damage and inflict all of this pain and suffering. They are letting these people do it. Why? I'm glad you asked. Because these liberal governors, these progressive governors, agree with these people. That's why. These liberal governors, these progressives, think these people have a right to destroy private property because deep down inside, these progressives don't believe there should be private property. and they're whining about a president who's telling them to act tough because they don't believe they should. That's why. Here's an exercise in contrast. What would creepy Uncle Joe have to say about what's going on? Well, fortunately, we don't have to guess, because he's come out of his bat cave and let us know. In his first in-person appearance in weeks, presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden addressed the concept of institutionalized racism. By the way, that's a term that is completely made up, and by and large in America, it's non-existent. If there is institutionalized racism, it is within the halls of those who keep screaming about it. He included a few choice words of wisdom for police officers confronting a difficult situation that could involve the use of deadly force. Aim lower. Shoot him in the leg instead. I'll let that one just sit there for a minute. Wait. You want to train police officers to shoot people in the leg? Did you not know that there are rather large arteries in the leg? Somebody could bleed out. Did you not know that sometimes if you shoot somebody in the leg, you're just going to piss them off and things are going to get worse, especially if they're on certain drugs? Joe Biden is an embarrassment. A complete and total embarrassment. He should have stayed in his basement. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. It is about halfway through today's edition of the podcast. Yesterday was a pretty decent day around this place. I started construction on the stage. I told you a bit about this yesterday. The happy story that still was overshadowed by all of the stupidity going on in cities across America. We got a washer and dryer. Upfront cost about $50. Had to order a part for $45. The dryer's been working since it was brought into the house. We started using it not too long after I plugged it in, and it's great. The washer needs a new seal on the door. That's coming. It'll be here next week. And in the meantime, to get them up off the floor, to make it easier for my wife and myself to get things in and out, rather than having to bend way all the way down to the floor to open and close doors and move things around, I'm building a stand to put them both on to go in the laundry. And yesterday I got the frame built. I've got, so far the frame is built. It's all glued and screwed together. And the next up is to put the top on it, the deck that the washer and dryer will sit on. And that'll get done this morning. Unless something else turns up, because I got a phone call literally in the minute before I went live here. I got a phone call from my mom. She's 85. She's having some vision problems and she needs some help getting to and from someplace for an exam to find out what's going on. And so that may well end up occupying the remainder of the day. She can't get it. She can't find out about getting an appointment until after I'm through here anyway. So it's not like I'm ignoring her to do this, right? So, and I have a session this afternoon at 2. I have to be there at least a half an hour before that. And I've got to see if she develops, and if the issue requires my presence, I got to be there, and I'll have to, have to deal with that as it comes. We'll see. But if none of that happens, then I'll be putting the decking on the top of the thing and putting the trim on it and sanding it and getting it ready to paint. And hopefully I can get that done today. Put a new shelf over the washer and dryer in that space last night. There was much weeping and gnashing of teeth and anger because things weren't cooperating. But that's all done, and it's a huge upgrade for us. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about this moving forward. And why is this? Because I live a normal, rational, real life. Have I made all the best decisions in my life? No, I have not. Have I been an idiot sometimes? Yes, especially in my younger days. And so I look at what's happening in our cities around America today, and I see all these young people out there being idiots. And I keep remembering what Churchill said. If you're not a liberal when you're 25, you have no heart. If you're still a liberal when you're 40, you have no brain. And I see these older people who are sympathizing with these younger people, and I can only think, you checked your brain at the door. You checked your brain. You're not thinking. The president yesterday, one thing that's got everybody incensed, everybody on the left, they're just, I can't believe this. This is a dictatorship. He's talking about mobilizing the military, the National Guard, etc., to put an end to this violence. And we saw last night, even though he talked with governors yesterday, cities around the country, oh, we instituted a curfew. They can't be out after a certain time. Hey, criminals never have obeyed the law. You have to come down hard on them. People who don't care about the law aren't going to be influenced because you decided to flex your legal muscles. You actually have to do something they'll respect. And sadly, in this case, you have to hurt them. And you have to put them in jail. And you have to make their life extremely difficult before they will stop doing what they're doing. Now, there are a lot of questions about putting military on the ground and the use of the National Guard. Can the president do this? And I've got a, this will be in the show notes today, and I want you to get the show notes today. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. The link will also be in the Facebook feed today as well, because these answers are there, and there are links. As I tell you, there are links in the articles, there are links in this particular Twitter thread that take you to the actual legal government documents supporting what's being said here. And now, this is a short thread with answers and citations to authority for five big questions. It's from a guy named Steve Vladek on Twitter. One, isn't the military already on the ground? The answer, yes. This all deals with Minnesota, but it applies nationally. The Minnesota National Guard has been deployed by Governor Walz, but the Guard wears at least two hats. Right now, it's wearing its state hat, subject to the controls solely of the governor, which is uncontroversial. Two, doesn't the Posse Comitatus Act bar use of federal troops for domestic law enforcement? No. The Posse Comitatus Act only bars such use of the military without statutory authorization. Several statutes authorize such use of the military for law enforcement. This is part two of the same question. As relevant here, the Insurrection Act. We've heard a lot about the Insurrection Act in the last day or so. And 10 U.S.C. subsection 12406, which governs the federalization of guard troops. When these statutes are properly invoked, there is no Posse Comitatus problem with domestic use of the military. Three, doesn't the governor have to request troops before the president can send them? Not necessarily, although some of these authorities require a state request before federal regulars or federalized guard troops can be used for domestic law enforcement. Some of them don't. Four, but if the governor has already called out the National Guard, doesn't that block them from being federalized? No. The authorities to federalize the Guard do not depend on what they were doing beforehand. There may just be less need to do so if they're already on site. Five. Now, this one spreads out a bit. There's subsections on this one. Okay, fine. So what are the actual limits on when the president can use Guard or regular troops for domestic law enforcement? This is the hardest one. So we saved it for last. The Insurrection Act is open-ended, leaving to the president the power to decide if circumstances warrant. The use of militia and armed forces to enforce federal authority. This is subsection 252. Whenever the president considers it unlawful, that unlawful obstructions, combinations, or assemblages, or rebellion against the authority of the United States make it impracticable to enforce the laws of the United States in any state by the ordinary course of judicial proceedings, he may call into federal service such of the militia of any state and use such of the armed forces as he considers necessary to enforce those laws or to suppress the rebellion. And, subsection 253, the president by using the militia or the armed forces or both or by any other means shall take such measures as he considers necessary to suppress in a state any insurrection, domestic violence, unlawful combination, or conspiracy if it, one, so hinders the execution of the laws of that state and of the United States within the state that any part or class of its people is deprived of a right, privilege, immunity, or protection named in the Constitution and secured by law, and the constituted authorities of that state are unable, fail, or refuse to protect that right, privilege, or immunity, or give that protection, or, two, opposes or obstructs the execution of the laws of the United States or impedes the course of justice under those laws. If any situation covered by Clause 1, the state shall be considered to have denied the equal protection of the laws secured by the Constitution. And we're watching that happen right now. These progressive governors are actually depriving the people of their states of their constitutional rights by not protecting them and their property from these criminals. Historically, the real checks on abuse of these authorities have been political. The Insurrection Act hasn't been invoked since 1992, largely because domestic use of the military is generally unpopular. But it's not implausible to argue that these statutes could apply now. And it's hard to imagine courts second-guessing factual determinations by the president that circumstances warrant use of the military to restore order. Instead, the real constraint today might be responsibility. If Trump invokes these statutes, he'd own all that follows. There's a lot more to say on the topic. If you're curious about the broader historical and constitutional foundation for these authorities, there's a reference in this particular thing. So get the show notes today. The military's job, by the way, once deployed in this context, is to supplement civilian law enforcement, not supplant it. They'll be enforcing the same laws and applying same penalties. Many will still be wary of domestic use of troops, but it's not a threat per se to the rule of law. And hopefully that helps you understand. And like I said, please, please, please refer to the show notes, because there is much information here that I read through a couple of things I wasn't going to read through simply because it was necessary to better understand. You see, what we're watching happening here is not spontaneous. We're actually watching an insurrection take place. We're actually watching organized rebellion against authority take place in state after state and city after city. And please, if you don't notice anything else, notice this. And that is the government presiding over these states. Is it conservative or is it progressive? The states where this is happening, by and large, for the most part, progressive. I said conservative because I'm living in Alabama. It's happening here. But we have a fairly conservative state government. Of course, politicians are afraid to offend people. Politicians, bless their hearts, they live in constant fear, especially Republican politicians. Progressive politicians, they don't care. They'll do what they believe is right, because progressivism is pretty much a religion. And these people believe they're being faithful to their call. So they will do things even though you disagree strongly with those things, because as far as they're concerned, you're not enlightened enough to understand why they're doing what they're doing. Republicans, bless their hearts, they tend to live in fear of their own shadows sometimes. They're scared to death that they'll lose the population, that lose the vote. They're scared to death that they'll offend the wrong people. And so they handle everything with kid gloves. And sometimes the gloves need to come off and those hands need to pick up an AR-15 and deal strongly with the situation. Because if you don't, these same people will be back, and next time it'll it'll be worse. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to hear from you. Or good to... I just heard from somebody. It's good to hear from you. Thank you. And I'm looking at to see... Hi, Brian. Good to have you on board today. I sidetracked myself here. I need to move forward and move away from the distractions. I was telling you about earlier about my mom and the situation. She just let me know she's got things handled, but still, it's my mom. I want to be there, make sure she's okay. And so if I have to, then everything's going to end up getting canceled today, and there's going to be some people. I'm going to be on the phone with them. No, you turn this up. No, turn that up. Anyway, I wanted to go through something with you that was posted to Facebook yesterday by a guy in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm looking at it, and I don't know if I'll have enough time to get through everything, but I'm going to try to. Who actually went out amidst everything that was going on in Raleigh, and he's documented everything he saw. And I think it's an eye-opener, and you should be aware of this. If you follow the podcast on Facebook, then you've already seen this. But I wanted to share it with you for those who don't read everything I post, because I know how that is. You look at things going, yeah, you need to move along. I do that myself. On Sunday, May 31st, this is by a guy named Jason Pipes on Facebook. He says, on Sunday, May 31st, I witnessed firsthand the riots in Raleigh, North Carolina. It wasn't pleasant, but I wanted to see for myself who these people were and what was occurring. I wanted to see things on the street with a perspective towards the strategy and tactics of protesters and law enforcement. Seeing things firsthand without any filters was elucidating. I was able to move about the city by car and on foot and use direct emergency communication for details. He was monitoring the emergency channels. For the most part, people left me alone, and I was able to watch and observe what was taking place. I spent about 4 to 5 hours doing so. I saw up close the actions of the rioters and the responses of the police. More than a few times, I felt the brunt of pyrotechnics used from both sides, and multiple times encountered clouds of tear gas. It was a chaotic situation, but it was possible to make out many details as the situation evolved. The majority of the people I saw were young. About 10% were gawkers and college kids out for a thrill. About 10% were what I would qualify as bad apples with no apparent political intentions, just out to take advantage of whatever might transpire. About 40% were there for what they clearly felt was a legitimate protest of injustice, and about 40% were Antifa types. Actual Antifa, Black Bloc anarchists, and related affinity groups, working to use everyone else to fight the police, loot, burn, and cause mayhem. Most of the Antifa types were white. Outside of a few media, law enforcement, and a small handful of people that work as mediators in some situations, I did not see any other groups present, including counter-protesters or other agitators, as is being frequently reported. Translation: white supremacy groups. The protest began around 5 p.m. and was initially peaceful, as the news frequently likes to focus on. It should be noted that peaceful does not mean the crowd wasn't unruly or confrontational. The amount of threatening signs and comments and chants leveled at police, in some cases in their faces, was pretty intense and ongoing. One tactic used is to agitate and provoke a police response, an arrest or use of force, to which the protesters immediately react by filming for propaganda, as well as to stoke the crowd into a "they're coming for us" mentality. The law enforcement I saw did not generally respond to the provocations used and were pretty professional, almost reserved. Within an hour, it became very obvious those present had plans to do more than be peaceful. From about 6 p.m. on, things got very intense and increasingly more violent. The crowd frequently broke into multiple groups and moved in different directions, a tactic often used to stretch law enforcement thin and cause confusion regarding intent. Until around 11 p.m., police, for the most part, were acting reactively and had not been trying to clear each block, hold that ground gain, and disperse the crowd completely. They did use tear gas and flashbang devices to clear specific areas or where a certain group of protesters became a serious threat. Groups of officers organized into push teams operated to clear designated areas as needed. though arrests were made, mass arrests were not. Elements of any riot can be spontaneous and change with a range of factors such as weather, time, size of crowd, police response, the local population, density of the area, means of egress and ingress, etc. And individuals in a riot can do act completely independently. The psychology of mob activity is a long studied and documented phenomenon. That said, the majority of what I saw were clear coordinated efforts by differing levels of people part of or related to Antifa. It was fairly easy to spot their coordinated movements and the actions they led. I witnessed their use of handheld FRS radios, that's family radio services, that's the kind you can buy in Walmart, for communication. Their use of drones for observation and harassment, they used drones. Their use of high-powered lasers to disable or harm police and their vehicles, noted repeatedly on police radio. Designated individuals with medical and tear gas response supplies. Tactical coordination by individuals out of the fray but clearly calling shots. And empty pallets placed in the areas of protest. Many people are reporting these being found in cities around the U.S. By the way, I should add, many people are reporting they've been found with bricks, pallets of bricks. Apparently, these were now empty. None of those elements would be found at a spontaneous protest about legitimate concerns by people expressing their First Amendment rights to protest grievances. I saw communist, anarchist, and revolutionary flags and banners, and the individuals carrying them made their goals obvious. Insurrection. They directly and indirectly were communicating with and leading the skirmishing of others that were dressing and acting similar. There is absolutely no question Antifa was behind the riots I saw occurring in Raleigh. I strongly suspect, from what I have been seeing and reading, the same can be said about nearly every other city in the U.S. as well. Antifa may be a loosely based and amorphous group, but on the ground they are coordinated, they have communications and equipment, they are planning, and they are using elaborate and advanced tactics. The suggestions that small groups of outside right-wing agitators are responsible for the scale of violence and damage being seen was not evidenced by anything I personally witnessed. The sentiments fueling the protests are certainly legitimate, and they are capitalizing on them to spur large groups into direction action-style violence. Mobs of all sorts can get violent and loot, but rarely do they involve such coordinated and targeted attacks, and rarely do they last multiple nights across multiple cities, all experiencing similar events. That stems from a concerted effort by core groups of hardcore extremists who are using the weight of actual concerned protesters to backfill what their total numbers could not otherwise make up. But make no mistake, together they are creating an extremely violent and extremely dangerous situation. Notably, these types of protesters, the revolutionary extremists, have gained experience from a decade of protests about everything from Wall Street to police to war to general left-wing issues. Antifa-type extremists have for many years used the cover of other protests to push their violent agenda. In most instances, that resulted in broken windows, damaged vehicles, political graffiti, and localized destruction. Rarely did it ever occur in more than one or two connected areas for more than a night or two. They've learned from their experiences since 2008. In some cities, revolutionary bookstores give classes, both openly and covertly, on protest tactics and techniques. With the help of a willing mob, they're now using all sorts of new means, and many not so new, to wreak havoc and violence on a massive scale. I cannot be any clearer. Antifa, black bloc anarchists, and their direct affinity groups are specifically focused on violent revolution, abolishing police, and crushing capitalism. The pain of the death of George Floyd is real, and they are using it to further their own revolutionary political agenda. That may sound hyperbolic, and I wish it was, but it isn't. Their slogans, their flags, their banners, their statements online, their flyers, their past history, and their actions on the ground all make clear what they want. This isn't chic college angst or pent-up anger. This is an expression of revolutionary violence on a scale not previously witnessed in the United States. This isn't likely to end until people get a better understanding of what's happening, and ideally before it's too late. I don't know if these actions will spread to more suburban and rural areas, but that in part depends on how the leaders in our impacted cities respond right now. Legitimate protest leaders need to completely and unequivocally distance themselves from anyone willing to engage in violence of any sort. Our civic leaders need to step up and put a stop to this. Curfews need to be set and streets need to be a no-go zone for rioters. Resorting to phalanxes of National Guard on our streets is a sad but necessary step because things have gotten seriously out of control. Police rules of engagement need to immediately switch from defensive and reactive formations and crowd techniques to offensive and proactive. You cannot control a brazen and dynamic coordinated group of revolutionary rioters by only responding to their actions and giving them freedom of movement away from their direct targets. It's my hope people will quickly become aware of what's actually occurring on our streets in these riots. Their role in this must be understood. Now you know what's really happening. As I said, this is not spontaneous, and it's not about George Floyd.
Oh, we're done.